Nikos Katsantzakis was a prolific author born in 1883 on the island of Crete. We know him best for his magnificent Zorba the Greek, a book I love so much I have never dared to see the movie, certain that it cannot possibly capture the passionate beauty of that story. I did see the cinematic adaptation of Katsantzakis' The Last Temptation of Christ, in which Martin Scorsese somehow managed to shrink another magnificent book down to an utterly banal film. Nikos Katsantzakis began as a more philosophical writer and continued, even in his popular novels, to express a kind of spiritual consternation. One discovers often in his writing characters struggling between sensuality and asceticism, contemplative withdrawal and engaged activity. The bookish boss in Zorba, so reticent in the face of Zorba's appetitive excesses. The curious Jesus of Last Temptation, lured by both mystical, disembodied spiritualism and a sensual embrace of a settled life here. Our, as Barbara Crooker calls it in the reading you heard, our crazy, fallen world is judged harshly by Katsantzakis' pen, and yet this same world proves persistently seductive. Nowhere is that conflict spelled out any more clearly than in his beautiful novel, St. Francis. In one particularly telling scene, Francis and his companion Leo have arrived in Rome on their mission to win the Pope's approval for a new order. They're hosted by a mysterious old man who meets them in the streets and offers them humble hospitality for the night. In the course of their conversation, the strange figure stakes out a particularly severe position in Katsantzakis' familiar dilemma. He reveals himself to be a member of the Cathari, the radically ascetic sect that, as he explains, loves purity. In unforgiving terms, he declares, we have no use for this world. It is dishonest, a liar, a fornicator, a trap set by the devil. The world is not God's work. It is the work of Satan. God created only the spiritual world. Satan created the material world, into which our souls have fallen. To be saved, therefore, we must flee this world. Late in the night, reflecting on what they'd heard, Francis asks Leo directly what he makes of that perspective. The earth, Leo responds, the earth is good. I, for one, would like to harness my body to a turtle so that my earthly passage could last just as long as possible. Forgive me, Lord. Heaven is fine as one could wish. But oh, the scent of an almond tree in springtime. We here see life, our lives, the life of spiritual depth, from many differing perspectives. That said, I'd venture to guess that there's probably not a single regular participant here who sees the world through the utterly ascetic lens of the cranky Cathar. For all of our varying views, we're just not the kind to contend, we have no use for this world, it's a trap set by the devil. Or to believe, to be saved, we must flee this world. These sounds are carefully piped in. Don't let them distract you. This is all a part of celebrating life. It's wonderful. Thank you. Right on cue. We're not the kind to say we must flee this world in order to be saved. And yet, strangely, perhaps, we're not unfamiliar with Kazantzaka's struggle. Just what are we to make of the course of this world? What are we to make of our fellow citizens with whom we share this fragile blue ball? What emotions are you feeling these days? What emotions do you have after this past week? Exploitation, oppression, and such destructive, disheartening violence in places recognized and in places ignored. Greed and fear, a head in the sand's attitude towards serious science and its serious warning about the real state of things. And this week, the sideshow barkers of fear-mongering xenophobia, including here in our own state, where our Republican governor, Pat McCrory, and his Democratic challenger, Roy Cooper, both espoused ill-formed, fear-based, politically self-serving rhetoric. This old world. Remember this one from our own hymnal? This old world is full of sorrow, full of sickness, weak and sore. Longtime spiritual writer David Stendhal Rast concurs. In many parts of the world, he says, society is sick. Key words, he says, of this diagnosis are exploitation, oppression, and violence. So what are we to do? What are we to do? We're not likely to adopt the kind of escapist spirituality that completely condemns the world and sets its sights on the hopes for something better in the next one. But we may be tempted by a kind of escapist spirituality that retreats to something no bigger than our own souls, our own individualistic spiritual transformation. If the world, in a world that seems to be going to hell in a handbasket, intent on its own violent destruction, why not just invest in trying to achieve our own personal inner peace? We're not ascetics. But who of us isn't tempted at times to throw up our hands and withdraw from it all? David Stendhal Rast doesn't think that's necessary or healthy. Yes, society is sick. Yes, the diagnosis is exploitation, oppression, and violence. But there's a remedy. Stendhal Rast is convinced grateful living is a remedy against all three of these symptoms. Seriously? Grateful living? That's his remedy? Grateful living? That may work for some soft-hearted Benedictine monk safely sequestered from rough and tumble realities, but what of us, more tough-minded liberal religionists, unwilling to indulge in denial? For us, Sharon Welch, an academic ethicist, who has given these matters no small amount of serious attention. She writes, "The ground of challenging exploitation, injustice, and oppression is not a vision of how the world could be or will be in the future reign of God or after the revolution. The ground of challenging injustice is Sharon Welch, contemporary Unitarian Universalist theologian, believes the ground of challenging injustice is, it's right there in her book, Sweet Dreams in America, Making Ethics and Spirituality Work. Sharon Welch attests the ground of challenging injustice is, gratitude. The ground of challenging injustice, she writes, is gratitude. The heartfelt desire to honor the wonder of that which is. To cherish. To celebrate. To delight in the many gifts and joys of life. Sharon Welch asks, what is the wellspring of courage, transformation, and persistence? Then responds, acts of respect, of courage, of resistance, and transformation. There's that word again, transformation. Acts of respect, or courage, of resistance, and transformation spring from a deep reservoir of vitality and joy. Sounding like a protege of Zorba himself, she acclaims joy in living fully and well, joy in breathing, walking, running, dancing, making love, the joy of touch, smell, and taste, the joy of music that soars, laughing, raging, desiring, delighting, exulting in the wonders of life. It really all comes down to this. Sharon Welch believes that it's only when we are truly, deeply grateful for this world, we will regard it as worth saving. It's only when we feel some deep capacity to appreciate our world that we become motivated to work to make it better. Even better. Ironically, then, what Sharon Welch offers us, right in harmony with David Stendhal Rast, is a summons to thanksgiving. She's not suggesting that everything's okay. Not that at all. She's suggesting that if we cannot appreciate what is, we cannot sustain a vision for what could be. If we cannot feel deep gratitude, we cannot undertake the hard work of justice making. If we are despondent and despairing, cynical and caustic, belittling and bemoaning, we will deplete much needed reservoirs of respect necessary to make some positive difference. The passionate womanist writer Alice Walker joins in that same chorus. In a piece she calls Democratic Womanism, she sounds the call to nurture our planet to a degree of health. And without apology, she writes, impossible to make a bigger mess than has been made already. Devote ourselves, heedless of opposition. Heedless of opposition, to tirelessly serving and resuscitating our mothership, and with gratitude for her care of us worshipfully, worshipfully commit to rehabilitating it. All this gratitude, all these summons to gratitude, might they be on to something? Might gratitude save us from our own inclination toward greed? And in the process, inspire us to transform our community and our world in days that are so bewildering, that are so disheartening. Maybe we need to find our ways back to gratitude, to foregoing derision, to foregoing complaint, and instead attend to what makes life worth living and worth saving. I shared with some of you this summer my experience of attending a service at Mother Emmanuel AME Zion Church in Charleston. Just days after their beloved church was assaulted by an act of such horrific violence, I found myself in that ornate sanctuary. Much of the experience moved me deeply, but there was nothing more moving to me than the pervading sense of appreciation that infused the service. I didn't hear bitterness. I didn't hear testimony to how maligned they are, to how people are after them, out to get them. I didn't hear that. How people are against them, how people don't like their view of the world. I didn't hear that. How they need to get away from folks, how they need to create some space where they can be away from all those other folks. They didn't say that. I didn't hear them decry other people. I didn't hear them lash out in derisive tones. Though on that day, it might have been understandable, even excusable. The service began with joyous thanksgiving. It continued in joyous thanksgiving. It concluded with joyous thanksgiving. How are an oppressed people able to carry on? Maybe they know already what Stendhal Rast and Welch and Alice Walker are all trying to tell us. The ground of challenging injustice is gratitude. Toward the end of his life, Nikos Kazantzakis acknowledged that knowing his time was short caused him to have a clearer perspective in his lifelong quandary. Writing in Report to Greco, he affirmed, "I extend my hand. I grasp the earth's latch to open the door and leave. But I hesitate on the threshold just a little while longer. My eyes, my ears find it difficult, terribly difficult, to tear themselves away from the world's stones and grasses." The great Greek writer attested, "A man can say to himself, I'm satiated, in peace. I have no more wants. I've fulfilled my duty. I'm ready to leave. But the heart resists, clutching the stones and the grass, it implores, stay a little longer." Life, for all of its immense, sometimes overwhelming challenges, is precious, transient, fleeting. Life, for all of its exploitation and oppression and violence, is It's a gift. A gift to be received with gratitude. So this week, risk gratitude. Risk real thanksgiving. Allow your own sense of respect, of wonder, of awe, of amazement to overflow into thoughts and words and acts of appreciation. And to let gratitude motivate you to some act of greater compassion, to some gift of deeper generosity, to some courageous witness that counters fear, not with insults and derision, but with revolutionary gratitude. May it be so.